And now, the Dave Kimchin Show.
I have already asked my daughters to leave, so they are more or less prepared, but they are crying. I'm trying to keep not to cry in the front of them, not to make their crying even more crying. So psychologically, it's a rather difficult situation now.
That's Uliana back with us from Western Ukraine, from Lviv, and talking about the emotional decision to tell her children to leave their home, to move across to the border, to Poland, or otherwise get out of the country and be safe while she stands her ground and while so many others are doing the same thing, standing their ground and certainly trying to monitor their own personal security and hoping that at some point all of this madness ends. We are grateful to Uliana for telling us about what's happening on the ground with this update that she gives us. She's going to tell us about the refugee situation and also tell us about friends who are in Kyiv, which is also under continuous attack by Russian forces. We talked with Jose, who's in the Ukrainian military. He gave us an update just the other day. So that's up online as well. But we're just grateful to everybody there who is taking the time when they can to give us these updates, to let us know what's happening. Now let's get right to Uliana in Lviv. Uliana's back with us and she's in Lviv. It's great to have you back with us. I know it's been every day's harrowing, I'm sure. You're in an area that just had a bombing, right? About 35 people lost tragically. This was right by the Polish border, about 10 to 15, I guess we would say miles here. Did you see any of that scene? I mean, can you give us a sense of kind of when that happened and either what you saw or what's happening now?
Yes, we try not to talk a lot about the places of bombing because it's all also listened by Russians, and then suddenly it could be used in proper manner. So I will tell you only my feelings and some official info I have. So I would prefer not to give more details.
Sure, of course.
As here we are very strongly recommended not to share videos, etc., because it can be used by the enemy. It was Saturday night or Sunday morning when the siren has started going on in Lviv, and you know we are used to sirens, so it was okay. We stayed in the house, and this was something like 4 o'clock in the morning. But in 5:30, I've heard the explosions. They were quite far, and I understood that they finally targeted Lviv. They targeted a military place, so it was not a living house. And the perception was, you know, there was no fear. If in Kyiv, when I was leaving Kyiv, it was fear, and my hands were trembling, here there was no feeling, no fear, just waiting, okay, what's gonna be next? Should we move to shelter immediately or we should wait and see whether it's the end? So I only heard three explosions and we don't know whether it's a Russian missile or it's our air defense was trying to catch them. But then we read the news that it happened and like 35 people were killed and more than 150 were wounded. And later in the city, we saw a lot of ambulances going to different hospitals. We assumed that was coming from that place. Mm. And this is really close, but honestly, no fear. Because, okay, Lviv is the last point for me, for my husband, and we are not going to live from here, at least at this point of time. So we are still here.
I'm just, you know, I admire you, you know, how you say there's no fear. I think I can understand. At the same time, it's like, you know, everything just, it's got to feel so surreal. I mean, it's been more than 2 weeks now. So I know in a way you get into this mindset of a very defensive mindset and survivalist mindset, right? But was this the closest that there had been, again, without giving exact location, was this the closest an explosion has been to you since this war began?
Yes, I think so. And you know, this is somehow the brain facility to try to protect you. I think that the brain itself somehow put some sort of defense, and it doesn't accept it like 2 weeks ago, because each day we are looking at these explosions in different areas, and still we can treat Lviv as quite safe place. Still with this explosion, he's far with his tanks. He need to move another 300 kilometers to get to Lviv. Yes, there is some risks from Belarusian border, but it will be too close, maybe also to Polish border. So I don't know. I still can feel that it is safer in Lviv, like in Kyiv. Today in Kyiv, for example, one house exploded, and then there was another missile which landed on the street and killed one person, and nine were wounded. So it's more dangerous and more scary here in Lviv. You know, they decided that economy has to work because we need some flow of cash in the economy to keep it all going. And here in Lviv, they have decided that everybody who can work and all the businesses who are able to do something, they should continue with a normal life. So yesterday, more shops were opened and hairdressers. So there were quite queues to hairdressers, but they're working and you can cut your hair, you know, in 3 weeks. Everybody started to feel that you need to do something with your hair. So all in all, it allows brain to percept it in a different manner than it was 2 weeks ago, I would say.
I spoke with a gentleman in the Ukrainian army just outside of Kyiv who said the same thing the other day. He said that, you know, businesses are, you know, cafes are open when they can. And it's, I think for us, maybe in the States, you know, maybe there's this view of, you know, everything shutting down and people in a constant state of hunkering, well, down, you know, hiding. But that's not, obviously that's not what's happening. So when people can go out, I mean, is that a testament to just, you know, living in freedom and not living in fear and just going about your life as much as you can, at least.
As much as you can, as much as we feel it's safer here, we will do this. And, you know, what people are talking here about is that if you sit at home and do nothing, you don't bring any value. And by going to the office or by going to to the shop, you will provide some value which will help us to keep the economy under the water, so to say.
I did speak with Inna Sipson, a member of parliament, actually yesterday. She said that parliament's going to be working. They're looking at an emergency meeting to try to deal with some of the economic issues there. I know gas prices, for example, they're looking at possibly reducing the taxes to bring that down. Can you talk just a little bit about the economic strain that you know, people have been feeling? You've covered it a little bit, but can you kind of just expand on that a little bit more?
Okay. I'm in business, which is actually located in Kyiv, and we are not really able to do something. So the business has stopped because it's the place where the war is very close. But what I heard, and I follow the legislation because my background is financial background. So I follow the legislation, and I know that they have placed the law which allows if you are not able, you don't need to pay taxes. But again, it's both. From one side, they say yes, you are released from taxes if you are put into a condition being not able to pay that. From the other side, they are asking if you have a possibility, please pay taxes and please do report taxes, because that will help. And today I was listening to our government lead who said that they are working on the program where they will decrease the taxes for medium and small entrepreneurs, so they can be more free in these circumstances to bring more value to the economy. So that's what I'm reading and hearing here.
Understood. Let me ask you this. You had was it about 16 people or so in your house before? Are you still helping folks, kind of sheltering them or giving them some housing as they eventually, is it make their way into Poland, or they're trying to make their way out of Ukraine?
Yeah, Yes, there are still the same quantity of people, and they are all in the house. But we see the tendency that from one side, yes, it's safe here. From the other side, we have bombs in Lviv area. So we have made some decisions that children will have to leave, most probably, as we manage something. And we are working on that. So very soon, I think it will be less people in my house. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it will be more difficult to percept that somebody is leaving. So I'm also preparing myself that I have to ask. I have already asked my daughters to leave. So they are more or less prepared, but they are crying. I'm trying to keep not to cry in the front of them, not to make their crying even more crying. So psychologically, it's a rather difficult situation now.
To leave, to go, and to either go across the border, or where would they?
Yes, they will cross the border, and we will see Poland, and maybe after Poland, it will be something more far from Poland, because you know, as you told, it was like 10-15 miles from Polish border.
Yeah.
So you never know, this could happen 10-15 miles after Polish border.
Yeah, my gosh. And I know it's hard psychologically, like you said, you're trying to process all that, and you know, to tell your children to leave. I mean, how do you prepare for something like that? I guess no one really knows, right? I mean, this is so, oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know, I try to be strict with them, because mm-hmm. I know if I just start to be soft, I will cry with them and nothing will happen. So I try to keep a very strict face and telling them that they are not deciding. That's me who is deciding that. And they just have to listen because they need to leave. They are 15 and 19 years old, and they have much more to live in the front of them. And they should, if they survive there and we survive here, then we will think how to get back or how to rebuild here. But for now, they have to leave. And this is the matter of their physical security.
Sure. Yeah, no, yep. No question. Yeah. Do you think Lviv will hold for some, I mean, do you feel like, you know, for some time, I mean, I know, again, there's what just happened, but I mean, do you feel like the situation, you still have a little more time before things could possibly worsen? I know it's hard to say. It's obviously hard to say, right?
Yeah. First of all, you never know, because this night was also not calm. The siren has announced the danger at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then they stopped this danger situation like 7 o'clock in the morning. So 5 hours, we were not really sure what will happen. So I'm more sure that it's more difficult to come here on tanks, because it's a distance. And as we see, Kyiv is standing, south cities are standing like Mykolaiv, or east city like Kharkiv is still standing there. So there is some time. Some time has to pass before Russian troops will be here. But what is dangerous here is the air attacks. And this is managed quite easy from the Black Sea aquatorium. So you never know. So it's 50-50 situation. I'm saying this is safe, but I realize that this is not safe. So from both sides, you can say both. It looks like shops are working, but at night you are looking at the news and looking at this information about danger, and you are on backside of your head, you are expecting that this will happen, and you prepare yourself, you need to go to shelter, or do I stay and see what happens? Mm-hmm. So it's complicated.
When you sleep, when you go to sleep at night, I mean, do you sleep in a shelter, or do you stay close? No?
Okay. Honestly, no.
Okay.
And we have decided that maybe this is not the time. I don't know how stupid it is, but for now we have decided that we stay in the house. But we follow the situation tightly. Sure. And if I these explosions I've heard, it was quite far. But I thought, okay, if I am hearing something closer, we are moving immediately to a shelter.
Well, and I would totally understand, like, you know, you would you know, you want to stay in your house. I mean, that totally makes sense. I just wasn't sure, you know, what the mindset is and, you know, I mean, you know, logistically and, you know, how that works out logistically and such. But no, you want to stay in your house. It's your home, of course.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe this is not the right approach, but this is how we handle this at this point of time.
Sure. Well, and I think part of that is your defiant. I mean, just there's a sort of natural instinctive defiance maybe, right, in something like this, you know. I mean, you're this is a fight for your freedom and you want to live how you want to live, you know. I mean, maybe there's there's some of that in there too.
Exactly.
Go ahead. How does information flow? Like, I mean, is it like, I know you and I have texted on obviously a little bit, but like, are there broadcasts that kind of come in where you get information from, or is it more like, you know, friends and family kind of sharing different things? Like when you hear about something that happens in another part of the country, like how does that sort of travel? I guess probably the same in the West. I just wasn't sure.
I think we are very well informed of what's going on, and maybe even too much, I would say, because I'm using some Telegram channels which are broadcasting daily, and you are getting a lot of messages with the situations. Sure. You need for sure to split somehow whether you trust the information, because sometimes you can get some fake things or things which haven't happened. But I think I have quite a good feeling. And I can make a distinguish between things. And this is a lot of messages. Then some Ukrainian newspapers, which you can read on the internet, there you can get more analysis and analytics. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if I don't trust the information, I will go to the original source, which is also possible. Also, I know there is a TV channel marathon going 24 hours a day. So the information flow is very good. The main thing is try to make a distinction between what is really true and what is maybe somebody has written as a fake.
Go ahead.
I would say this is rather good sharing of information here. I can't say I'm lacking information.
Sure. No, yeah, I understand. And that's kind of what I was leaning towards or getting towards is you know, we, especially the media here, you know, there's such an effort to sort through what, you know, to verify everything. But I can only imagine, you know, when you're there, you're in the middle of it, you know, how you try to verify and check everything that's coming in, you know, I mean, that's gotta be even harder being in the, literally the thick of it all.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm used to that, because you need somehow critically to analyze what you're reading. But it's more about maybe other people who are not analyzing that much in their daily life. That could cause maybe some problems. I hope that what we have is rather transparent.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. I mean, as far as the refugee situation and I mean, have you seen things, has there been a slowdown in terms of people trying to get across the border, or like, what's the, what, like, I guess, as I say today, like, what's been the situation as far as you've been able to glean?
Yeah, my personal feeling is that the second wave of refugees has finished or nearly finished. The question mark whether the third one will start, because more and more from people who are left, more and more I hear that I'm going to stay, this is my final destination, or I will stay in Kyiv, or like my friend who unfortunately, as we planned, we wanted to join him today from Kharkiv. He is still there, and he doesn't want to leave Kharkiv. That was their decision. And unfortunately, the bombing started again, so there was no connection. He said, Ulyana, maybe I will be out of reach. And I tried, and it was out of. So I'm praying for him now that everything is good there. But it's more. The other wave will be for people who are more thinking: should they or should not they? This is my feeling. And I haven't been on the border last 2-3 days. There was no request to transfer somebody to the border. So I assume that the second wave is coming to the end.
Okay.
That's my feeling.
Okay. I understand. Okay. I gotcha. I think that connects with some of the stuff I've been hearing too, actually. You know, I'm just looking at some press also. You mentioned your friend. I mean, so, you know, the bombing starts and, you know, the connection's lost. I mean, what goes through your mind? You know, you said you're praying for him. I totally understand that. But I mean, how are you processing the, you know, that silence, you know?
It's difficult. Here I have more fear and more trembling when I have this no possibility to call. It's more difficult than fear of the bombing, I would say, because when we talk to you and I tell you that maybe this is not possible, and then I try to call him and I said no connection, and then I immediately feel that something is trembling inside of me. So this is more difficult. And I have another case who is my hairdresser. She is from a suburb of Kyiv, but we are quite friends, I would say. And 1 week she was without internet. You know these places, Irpin, Bucha, Hostomel, you should know them. And this was the village very close to Bucha. So there was no connection with her. Maybe 1 week, they were sitting in the shelter, no water, no electricity. So when she appeared online, it was the happiest moment maybe during last 2 or 3 weeks I had. And she said that they are going west, and they are like two old ladies or elder ladies, then younger, then a daughter, and then husband and another husband and a small dog. And she said that she's trying to find something in Lviv, but she's not able to. So I also was trying to find some placement for them. And it appeared there is no free spaces here. But near Lviv, 10 kilometers, my friend has a rather old house, which is maybe 100 years old, without proper water supply. You have it outside, and then the toilet is also outside. And I said, come on, this I can, if we will come there, we will clean that up. But if you want to stay in Ukraine, this is the only thing I can suggest to you. And they have accepted the proposal, and they say, no, Poland is not in our minds, we want to stay here. And they are living there now for 4 or 5 days, and they made their living a little bit better. They have improved some electricity, some water supply, but they are managing there, and they are happy that they have this opportunity to stay in Ukraine.
Wow. Yeah.
So this is another story.
And there's so many like that, right?
Not so many. Most of people trying to look for more secure things, but there are also a lot of people who want to stay here. And I hear this more and more each day.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, you don't, it's hard leaving home, you know, no matter what, and certainly in a situation like this. How's Maria? Did you mention her? Maria, I know we talked with her last time she was in Kyiv. She owns a cafe. She was standing her ground there. How's she doing?
She's doing, you can say, well, under the conditions.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's still a calm district in her place, but she has to do a lot of job, and she is very tired. And I have heard from her that she need to have some rest. I have told her that she need to have some rest, otherwise she will burn herself, because they are knitting the masks. You know, the defense mask for the tanks. And also people are coming to her cafe because they can feel that there is a point where we can share their thoughts and be together. So she doesn't have employees now, because most of them left. So she has to prepare coffee and dealing with these defense masks. So yesterday she was very tired, and I said, you need to sleep a little bit. Sleep and just eat. Don't forget to eat, because you will burn yourself. But hopefully she will manage.
Is that, you know, I guess we use the term self-care here, but, you know, talking about that, I mean, you know, remembering to eat, you know, remembering to stay hydrated, you know, to drink water, you know, I mean, all these basic things, is that hard to keep track of? I mean, you know, at a fundamental yes. level, because of this, like you said, I mean, telling, it's like, is that what it is? Is it friends reminding each other, just like you said to Maria, reminding her to sleep, reminding her to eat? Like, is that how people kind of help keep each other going, is to remind each other of just those basic things that yes. you can easily forget?
Yes, exactly. And you have to be reminded. My husband is always reminding me. I have some troubles with my health, and I have to be care about meals and the time schedule of meals. So this is my husband who all the time pushing me, you have to eat, you have to drink. So I have a bottle of tea always with me, so, and it is always full, so I can drink, because now I'm talking with you and I can already feel that it's fully dry in my mouth.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So yeah so I have a bottle of tea, hot tea, all the tea or some other drinks all the time with me.
Well, I thank you for taking the time, and I don't want to take too much more of your time, because I want you to be able to have that tea. Thank you for updating us. I mean, I really appreciate you doing that and, yes. and updating us on the ground. I mean, I think what you're doing is it's just helping so many people here, because this is a world event, you know. I mean, we don't want to use the term world war, obviously, that's, you know, there's fear of that, but this is something that the entire world is obviously focused in on, and rightfully so. And yes. what you're doing is really helpful. And I can't thank you enough for, you know, talking with us again and keeping us updated.
Thank you. Thank you also for the possibility to talk to people and to explain them the situation. And just one more message as previous time. We want to win, because we are right. We are fighting for our independence. Mm-hmm. And it's not us who came here. It's Russians who, it's not us who came to Russia. It's Russians coming to our land. And we will fight for our land. There is no other way around.
Absolutely. Yeah. Uliana, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.